Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, October 30th, 2024, on 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprout. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live and Instagram Live episode at Fran Storch ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. So, update on Lyme stuff. We are around the weekend that Lyme bites is happening, and I'm recording this before Lyme bites, so I am not 100% sure I'm going. I'm going to base it on how I am feeling, because I deserve a rest. It's going to be a gorgeous weekend. I'm injured right now, which is very frustrating, so I'll tell you a little bit about that. And I went to see Marissa Hauser for the second time today, and lovely, lovely naturopathic physician. Really enjoyed seeing her. First of all, in terms of my knee, we're not sure exactly what's going on with it. I went to see Marissa last week, and after offices in Hebron, I had my bike with me, and I went to the rail trail. I parked in Amston, and I did that 22-mile out and back to East Hampton. And if you ride a bike and you've ridden that rail trail, what goes on is it goes down, 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 down to somewhere in Marlboro, and then it goes up, 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 up to East Hampton. So it's a V. And then you turn around and you do it again. So the last quarter of that ride is kind of a slog. Regardless of your abilities and your strength, it's pretty intense. It's probably more fun to start at the Connecticut Railroad Museum in Willimantic and go out to Amston and then come back. Because you go up, up, up from Willimantic to somewhere in Lebanon, and then it goes down a little bit or flattens out till you get to Amston. And then if you want to go a little bit further, you're going to go down a little bit. You're going to climb back to Amston, and then again, somewhere in Lebanon, it's pretty much downhill except for going over the gates the rest of the way to Willimantic. So that was what I was going to do today after my visit. However, last week I had this glorious ride during this glorious weather. It was just absolutely wonderful. I felt wonderful afterward. I got up the next morning and did a short 20-minute easy walk from my house, 20 minutes, then did some gentle yoga, got up off the mat, and guess what? My knee said, nope, you're done. And so my knee is out again. It's swollen. Right now, if I bend the knee out, so if I make a V-shape inward with my knee, well, no, I guess outward, it like a, you know, half butterfly, if you know yoga, that's the most painful position. I can't sit cross-legged. I can sit cross-legged with the left leg, but not with the right. So I can't even do a cross-legged sit right now because the knee is flared. And I made a deal with myself. If the knee flares one more time to the point that I am sidelined for any length of time, I'm going to the orthopedic doctor. So I'm going to go to the orthopedic doctor. I put in a request to see one at UConn, and I haven't heard back from that. So I'm going to actually call them on the phone after I get done recording the show today. So that's it. And then, so I'm going to go to the orthopedic doctor, find out what's going on inside that knee, and get some orthopedic treatment if I need it. I'm going to go back and see Dr. Scott, my chiropractor. I'll do Epsom salt baths. I'll continue doing gentle yoga with a well-wrapped knee. Right now I'm able to do my weight training as long as I don't, anything. And I can't do planks unless they're knee down. So I do knee down with padding, and I wrap the knee, and you know, there's a compression sleeve on the knee when I'm doing the weight training, then I can do my weight training. But I can't do actual planks. Cannot go for a walk. My friend Kimmy, unfortunately, has some torn ligaments. So, and I noticed that she was riding on her trainer. So I asked her how she was able to do that and what her doc said. And what her doc said to her is it's fine for her to do 10 to 20 minutes on the trainer as prehab. if she tries to have surgery, that it's good for the circulation in the knee. And my physical therapist had previously said to me that riding a bike is good for your knee for circulation and because you're moving in one plane. So I said, okay. So right now I'm limited to riding 10 to 20 minutes as tolerated on the trainer and doing gentle yoga and doing weight training to tolerance with lots of support on the knee. And that's all I can do. I can't go for a walk in this gorgeous, gorgeous weather. And I can't ride my bike outside at the moment unless somebody says it's okay for me. I imagine if I go see Dr. Scott, he's going to be like, stay off the bike. I'm not sure what Nicole would say, the acupuncturist. And like I said, I'm going to try it again in with Nicole and Dr. Scott to get some care there. I took my first Epsom salt bath of the season. I wasn't feeling like taking Epsom salt baths in the warm summer. And I took my first one and I kind of saw why. It was the tub was really warm when I got into it. Didn't quite feel great, but after it cooled down a bit, it really did feel good. I felt better after I had taken the Epsom salt bath. And I was a little anxious this morning, having trouble getting back to sleep in the early morning hours. So I took Epsom salt lotion and I put it on and I found that relaxing. I do recommend, if you're interested, getting Epsom salt lotion. There are different brands that you can get. And if you can't get into a bath or you don't have a bathtub, but you want to benefit from Epsom salts and you want to benefit from it topically, it's very nice. It's relaxing. Again, the way that Epsom salt works, I believe, I don't know how much of it gets into your body, but it is definitely relaxing. And I do wonder if there is a bit of detoxification that goes on. But what I do think goes on with Epsom salts is you're applying magnesium sulfate directly to the skin. And the magnesium sulfate is interacting with gated channels on the nerve endings on your skin. And so when that happens, magnesium is very relaxing to your nerves. And so when it interacts with the nerve endings on your skin, it sends a message for your whole body to relax. And I think that's part of how it works. So it's a lovely combination, in my estimation, to take an Epsom salt bath and or do put on some Epsom salt lotion and then stretch. Whether you stretch or whether you do yoga or whether you do yin yoga or restorative yoga, it's a great thing. Another great combo is if you want to go to Yono, if you can go to Yono, you can do a float, and the float is very different. I mean, it's an Epsom salt bath. It's a high intensity Epsom salt bath, because remember, when you do a float, there's, instead of 2 cups of Epsom salts to a tub, which is what I use in a bathtub and what I recommend, it is a ton, 1,100 pounds of Epsom salts. So it's a super saturated solution of Epsom salts that you lie in and float for whatever you've scheduled. I think a minimum at Yono is an hour, and you can schedule longer than that if you want to. So you do that. You can book a 3:30 float on a Friday or a Sunday, and then immediately after, sign yourself up for restorative yoga. Great combination. Oh my goodness. So I'm considering doing that on Friday if I can't get in to see the acupuncturist, because I have some time off. So I'm thinking of doing that. So I'm going to do a lot of self-care and cry a little bit because all my friends are outside riding their bikes, except for Kimmy, who I feel sad for as well. Very frustrating because we're having this glorious autumn where we're having not super hot weather, but warmer than usual and lots of sunshine and glorious colors. And I am relegated to sitting in my yard or driving around and looking at it as opposed to going for a walk or hike or a bike ride. Very, very frustrating. Cannot stand it. Maybe this weekend I'll talk to Ron about driving to some pretty peak where we can walk around just at the top of a peak and just look at a glorious overlook, just so I don't feel like I'm missing the glorious fall. Anyway, so the high holidays are over, and today is the last day of Sukkot, and tonight is Simchat Torah. I don't know if I'm going to attend. It depends on how I'm feeling. You know how that goes, but it's the day to celebrate the season. And I haven't sat inside a sukkah. I haven't been inside a sukkah. I was going to go to see a friend, and Ron wasn't feeling well on Saturday night, so we canceled those plans. So I haven't been inside a sukkah. So I will probably try to do that. But anyway, so this knee has sidelined me again, and my plan is, I said, once the knee sidelines me again, I am going to the orthopedic physician. So I'm going to make a call today and try to get in with that orthopedic physician. And I'll tell you how that goes. Meanwhile, I went to visit the lovely Marissa Hauser over in Hebron at Dow Vitality. I had a great visit with her last week and a great visit with her this week. Last week was just for her to review what's going on with me. And this week was to work through my supplements and talk about things that I was taking and things maybe I don't need anymore. And we offloaded a bunch of stuff. It was very good. We were like, you know what? There's overlap here. Let's not take this anymore. Let's not take this. So there's a bunch of supplements I'm not going to take anymore because there's just overlap. And for example, I was taking an immune complex with mushrooms and elderberry and a couple of other herbs in it. And she said, if you're taking the lime herbs, they're doing the same thing. So maybe you don't need to take that right now. I was taking amla, which is a pitta calming herb from Ayurvedic medicine, which I was taking for my blood pressure. I'm on lisinopril. I'm on a blood pressure pill right now, so I don't really need that. And she said she had looked into it and said it's a wonderful antioxidant. You're on a lot of other antioxidants, plus you're eating them, so don't worry about that. She also told me something really interesting about chlorella. So I was waking up in the middle of the night. When I wake up in the middle of the night at 2-ish, 2-ish, 2:30-ish, usually have to go to the bathroom. At that time, I'll go to the bathroom and come back and I'll take my chlorella. Well, lately I was finding that I was taking the chlorella and it was waking me up. It was keeping me up. I was having trouble getting back to sleep. I am wondering if one of the things that's going on is that I'm cleaning out and the chlorella had less to tag onto. So it was just floating around in my blood, energizing me. So I decided to stop taking it. And then I talked to her about it. I told her, I don't think I can take the chlorella in the middle of the night. It's waking me up. It's energizing, which is great. But maybe I need to take it at a different time of day. What she told me that it was that chlorella is pretty selective about what it grabs onto. It's not going to grab onto nutrients and it's not going to grab onto herbs. So I can take it at the same time as other things. So instead of not taking the chlorella, I'm going to take it at the same time as my morning supplement. So that was great news. So, and then I'll take the chlorella during the day and as though it's caffeine, no later than, you know, noon or 2 o'clock or something like that. So that was great. So that's an interesting thing. If you need a binder, if you need something to take out toxins, to take out inflammatory compounds, to take out heavy metals, chlorella can be helpful. The product I'm taking is fermented. I like it that it's fermented and I like it that it's the little tiny pills. You can get it in bigger pills, but generally when you get it in bigger pills, it's got more encapsulation to hold it together. So you're going to get an easier to absorb product if you get fermented chlorella. So I'm very pleased with the fermented product that I'm getting. And when you get the fermented product, you get the little tiny capsules. So you take a whole bunch at once. You take like 5 caps at once is 500 milligrams at a time. So I'll probably take 500 to 1,000 milligrams a day. So 2 sets of 5, that sounds like a lot, 5 tablets, but really they're small tablets. They're easy to get down. It's not a big deal. You could also get chlorella powder. And I'm going to just do the little tablets because I really like this particular product that I'm taking. She also saw that I was taking spirulina. I was putting spirulina into my protein shake in the morning. She said, if you take in the chlorella, maybe you don't need the spirulina. So I think what I'll do is I'll keep taking the spirulina until it's gone and I'll stop. So I'm not going to take that anymore. I was taking SPMs, specialized pro-resolving mediators. And she said, you have a lot of essential fatty acids on board. You have a lot of anti-inflammatory stuff. Maybe you could let that go too. So, and then I was taking astaxanthin as well, which is a wonderful antioxidant. She said, again, you're taking a lot of antioxidants. Maybe you can kick that one. And she wanted me to go back on Japanese knotweed tincture, which I'm a little nervous about because I thought it was giving me headaches. Same with cordyceps. I loved taking cordyceps because it was energizing, but I thought it was giving me headaches. She said, try it again and take chlorella at the same time. Maybe it won't give you a headache. I think the thing to do is to take the chlorella at the same time as the Japanese knotweed and the cordyceps and hydrate, hydrate, hydrate. So the other thing I'm doing at her suggestion is hydrating like crazy. If you're looking at Instagram or Facebook Live, I'm hydrating with this stuff. It's a relatively local electrolyte company that's based in Southampton, not Southampton, Massachusetts or Connecticut. I think there's a Southampton in Connecticut. Southampton on Long Island. So it's Southampton, Suffolk County. And so these electrolytes are very nice. I've got the watermelon flavor, which is very delicious. I like these electrolytes because they don't have acid in them. There's no citric acid or malic acid. And some electrolyte products will have citric or malic acid in them, mostly for taste. If they have a flavor in it, the citric or malic acid makes it tart. The problem is I have cavity problems. So if I told my dentist that I was taking, or my hygienist, that I'm taking a product that has citric acid or malic acid in it, they're going to be like, oh, good, you're eating your enamel. More money for us. So anyway, I really like this product because it leaves out the acid. It's very nice. And my dentist, actually, the hygienist is like, don't drink it. The dentist is like, if you're going to drink something acidic, make sure you have plain water to chase it with as you're drinking it. So she's like, if you like coffee or tea, make sure you have plain water on hand. Take a few sips of your coffee, take a few sips of water. Then you're in the bathroom all day. I'm in the bathroom all day anyway. Oy. But these electrolytes are lovely because they're not super acidic. They have a little bit of flavor. They're a little bit sweet from stevia. Really enjoying them. And because this is community radio, I can't tell you which ones they are. So what am I going to say? But that's something to look for. Look for electrolytes that don't have citric or malic acid in them. If you want them to have a little flavor, you can do that. You can also get unflavored electrolytes that also don't have citric or malic acid because there's no need to make them tart. And if you do that, just get, you know, some kind of keto electrolyte drop or something. If you do that, those plain electrolyte drops, those are usually very economical because you only need a few drops to a glass of water. And then if you want it to be flavored, you flavor it yourself. You can squeeze in some lemon or some lime or whatever fruit you like. If you want to get a natural fruit flavoring, you can squeeze that in. You could put a splash of your favorite iced tea in or your favorite juice. Again, if you're drinking juice, then you have to be concerned about the acid that's in the juice and you need to chase with water. But because these don't have acid, if you like the way they taste as they are, you could just drink them. So I'm experimenting with different electrolytes because I'm taking that blood pressure med, that lisinopril. So I am now up to 5 milligrams of lisinopril. It's working okay. I'm not getting the big spikes in blood pressure like I was. Blood pressure is still not perfect. I'm concerned I'm going to have to ultimately go to 10 milligrams, but we're at 5. I'm going to talk to Dr. LaGuardia next week about should I stay with 5 or ramp up to 7.5. So we're hoping, I'm going to stay with 5 for a little while. I'll talk, for at least a month, I want to acclimate to the 5. And then if I acclimate to the 5 and he's like, you got to keep going, then I'll go up to 7.5, see how we do. And I can take a 5 and a 2.5 together, and there you go. The other thing you can do is the 5s are scored, so I can break those in half and do it that way. So I'll talk to him about it. Lisinopril is cheap. It's off patent. It's very inexpensive. That's the nice thing about taking this blood pressure med. It's inexpensive. I'm very fortunate that I'm not having side effects. The only thing is I have to really hydrate. I think overnight I get a little dehydrated, but you know, that's fixed by drinking. And when I wake up finally for the day, I'm able to hydrate more, so I feel better. And you know, and I'm putting electrolytes in my water pretty much all the time, so that's making me feel better. But anyway, I'm tolerating this lisinopril. I talked to a patient yesterday who had tried lisinopril, and they were not able to take it because they got the classic cough from lisinopril. I think that I cough occasionally, like I'll have a couple of bouts of where I cough a little bit, but certainly not throughout the day. And I wonder if that's because the way lisinopril works, one of the things it does is it causes you to release some bradykinins, which relax your blood vessels. That's part of how it works. And those bradykinins will wind up in your throat and give you a tickle and make you want to cough. So I'm taking so much anti-inflammatory stuff that's just not happening. So that may be why I'm not having that problem. And she's just not taking as much stuff as I'm taking all this stuff because of the chronic Lyme and the vaccine injury stuff. So off we go. So anyway, so that's what's going on there. This weekend coming is the Lyme Bites Conference. If you're listening to this on the 30th, Wine Bites Conference happened last weekend, but I have it hasn't happened yet while I'm to this date, so I'm still considering whether I'm going to attend. And if I do, then I'll report on it. If I don't, I'll be sitting in the sun and working on changing up my protocols. So that's nice. So that's what's going on there. Ron is still having trouble. He gets on his bike and he doesn't feel that he's okay as long as he stays on a flat road and spins. But once he puts any effort into it, he has a lot of muscle pain. And now we're wondering if he also has tick-borne illness. He certainly could. He has had diagnosed Lyme disease. He was bitten by at least two ticks this year. And he had one bout where he was bitten by two ticks at the same time. So we're going to test him. We're going to get him a proper Lyme disease test, and we'll see if he has tick-borne illness. And we're going to test him for Lyme, Babesia, Bartonella, Ehrlichia, and Anaplasma. And if he has any of those, then we're going to treat him. And it may be that all this muscle stuff, that the reason it's not going away is not necessarily because of the evolocumab that he took, but because he, in fact, has tick-borne illness. And then he'll have to do what I'm doing. And he's looking at what I'm taking going, no, no, no. We'll see. So we'll see how that goes and we'll report. Okay, so if you're listening to this in any time in October, Halloween is upon us. On WHUS, you'll be listening to this on October 30th. So therefore, tomorrow is Halloween. And in the state of New Jersey, where I'm from, it's Mischief Night. So Halloween is so exciting to people in New Jersey that you need 2 days for it. You need 1 day to do all the mischief, to throw eggs at cars and toilet paper the trees and run around and otherwise do havoc-y kinds of things. So I didn't realize that Mischief Night was a New Jersey thing and that there are some states that have other names for the mischief that you create on October 30th. Other states have different names for it. Connecticut doesn't have anything on. I said, you mean October 30th is not Mischief Night? What do you call October 30th? They said October 30th. So I said, so when do you throw toilet paper on the trees and throw eggs at the cars? They said on Halloween. Like, well, that's kind of a lot to do, isn't it? Anyway, so I remember a couple of years ago, it snowed on Mischief Night, and I had my Halloween garb on. I can't imagine that it's going to snow because today it might reach 80 degrees. And at least it's going to really reach 79 here, and probably at Windsor Locks it's going to reach into the 80s. It's gorgeous right now. Absolutely gorgeous. It's making me nuts. Anyway, so a couple of years ago on the 30th, it had snowed, and I remember going outside and putting some toilet paper on some of our lawn chairs, which we hadn't taken in because all of a sudden it was snowing. It went from 70 degrees to snow, which is it does in Connecticut sometimes. And I don't think I threw eggs at anything. It's a waste of a good egg, a good source of protein. Toilet paper, you know, it's not the pandemic anymore. You could take a couple of pieces and throw it on a tree or something. I don't recommend doing that. I mean, it's not actually that nice to do, but it is kind of funny. But I don't recommend going out and, you know, creating a headache for somebody who doesn't appreciate it. Anyway, so happy Halloween. Happy a blessed Samhain to those of you who celebrate. And a blessed Day of the Dead to those who celebrate, which is actually November 1st or 2nd. Hydrate, hydrate, hydrate. And there's that tickle in my throat. Okay, so I thought I'd just run through some healthier Halloween treats so that you're not entirely taking up the Snickers and the Three Musketeers and the Reese's. So, by the way, if you like, I don't know if you can get a candy, a nougat-type candy that's super healthy. I don't know that there's any health food store versions of Three Musketeers and Snickers and Milky Way. And those three candies have a very, very fluffy nougat. And I love nougat. I like to eat torrone, which is classic Italian nougat. And that's a healthier, getting just classic turrón is going to be torrone or turrón or what, depending what language you're saying it in. Turrón is going to be healthier than your Milky Way or your Three Musketeers or your Snickers. So that's a healthier option for those things. If you are really a fan of Reese's, the thing with Reese's is Reese's can has some chemicals in it that maybe you don't want to be eating. It's milk chocolate, and the thing with milk chocolate of certain large brands is they can use spoiled milk in it, because it doesn't matter if the milk is spoiled because it's heated and cooked. It's not going to make you sick. But people in Britain, they come and they try some of our just pedestrian chocolates, our, you know, classic chocolate bars, and they're like, whoa, this tastes sour. It's because there's lactic acid in it, because the milk is fermented. So if you take a Cadbury bar, which is, I don't know if there's some Cadbury factories in the U.S., but Cadbury was started in Britain anyway, there's no fermented milk in it, so it doesn't have that classic sour taste. And I had never noticed it before, but what you can do is take some Cadbury chocolate side by side with a Hershey's Kiss and taste them, and you will find that the Cadbury's is mellower and sweeter than the Hershey's Kiss that has a little bit of tang to it. It tastes like there's a little bit of cheese in it. It's not going to hurt you. It's just weird. And then if you get health food store chocolate, you're not going to have this issue at all. I mean, if you get milk chocolate from the health food store, they're not going to use fermented milk. And of course, the health food store, you can get 70% plus chocolate, which is going to be better for you. The other thing is there's a couple of brands of healthier alternatives to Reese's, and you're going to find those in the health food store. You can find them in the health food section of your grocery store too. So I recommend doing that, because they're not going to have TBHQ and other, you know, poor quality fats, poor quality emulsifying ingredients, and they taste really good. It's not like they don't taste good. They taste amazing. Some of the health food brand of peanut butter cups, and they also, those health food brands come in peanut butter, they come in sunflower butter, they come in almond butter, they come in cashew butter, all covered in dark chocolate. Amazing. So that's going to be a healthier option for you. So here's some other options. So beware on Halloween that eating too much sugar isn't really good for you. Surprise, surprise. It's natural to want to treat yourself, but be careful of eating way too much. If you can parse out your sugar treats and make sure you eat them after you've, like have one fun size candy after you've eaten a full meal and just really enjoy it, and so that you're not sitting on an empty stomach and, you know, you're taking one piece of candy after another. That's not good for you. But you will have less impact on your blood sugar and on absorbing that sugar if you have a good meal first that has protein, fiber, and healthy fat, and then you have one piece for dessert. That's much better than like having a snack of a few pieces of fun size in the afternoon, or having like a whole bunch of fun size in the afternoon. So sugar rushes are not really good for you. They cause spikes in blood sugar and insulin. When you spike your insulin, guess what you get? Inflammation. Good times. So if you or your kids struggle with pacing your sugar, opt for treats that take a longer time to eat. Lollipops, for example, or if you can manage to suck on, like take a little piece of chocolate and suck on it. Now, that's really hard to do. You could also get caramel, although the problem with caramel is caramel stick. Any candy that's sticky is going to drive your dental hygienist and your dentist nuts. So what do you do when you eat something sweet and or sticky and or acidic? Follow it with water. You just have water along with it, and then you'll dilute the candy as it comes off. Not all sugars are created equal. The sugars different. Their added sugars differ from natural sugars, and so high fructose corn syrup is going to really raise your ultimately raises your insulin. It doesn't raise your insulin immediately, but it can lead to fatty liver because it's processed by the liver. White sugar and honey still can raise your blood sugar. Natural sugars are natural. They're naturally occurring. They're found in whole foods. They come with other nutrients. So fruit and dairy are sources of natural sugars. So when you eat a plum, you're getting, not only are you getting the fructose that's in the plum, you're getting antioxidants that are going to help to balance the sugar, and you're also getting fiber that's going to help to slow the absorption of that sugar. And you're going to get some B vitamins and minerals that, again, are going to help to modify the sugar absorption. Too much sugar, if you don't have a pre-existing health condition, if you have, then you can snack on sources of natural sugar. If you're eating 2,000 calories a day, you want to cap your sugar intake at 200 calories a day, which is like 12 teaspoons of sugar. And if you can do less, that's better. The American Heart Association's recommendation is less. So for only 9 teaspoons for men and 6 teaspoons for women. And that's max. That doesn't mean make sure you get 9 teaspoons of sugar if you're a guy and 6 if you're a female. No, that means that's your max. And less is better. This is a situation where less is better when you're talking about your total sugars. I've been talking about teeth. Certain candies aren't so good for your teeth. Sugar in general is not good for your teeth because it causes you to make plaque. You make plaque and then you start getting acids that start breaking down your tooth enamel. You break down your tooth enamel, now you have dental caries, cavities. So, you know, going to the dentist is no fun. I mean, I love my dentist, but I have been seeing her too much, and I'm not real happy about it because I apparently have some habits that erode my enamel, which I'm working on and which I've talked about in other episodes. So sour candy usually has some kind of acid in it, like citric acid. It can erode your tooth enamel. A lot of dentists say just don't even eat gummy candy. I have my hygienist say to me, don't use honey. I'm not going to not use honey. I would prefer to use honey and drink water afterwards. And just make sure that, again, if you want to indulge in something sticky or sweet, just make sure you have water on hand and that you make sure you're drinking just plain water or some kind of beverage that is not acidic afterwards. I wonder if this is a job for alkaline water, and you can get alkaline water in stores, and you can get alkalizing systems that cause your water to be alkaline. The idea being that alkaline water will neutralize acidic inflammatory compounds in your body. I don't know how true that is, but maybe there's something to it. And if you tend to eat a lot of sugar, having alkaline water might not be a bad idea. Gummy candies really work their way around your teeth. That's going to be gummy candies. That's anything chewy, anything that's a gummy, and also caramel. Nougat, to an extent, it depends on how sticky it is. And nougat, usually like what's in your Three Musketeers and your Snickers and your Milky Way. Milky Way has caramel in it, and so does Snickers. And Three Musketeers does not. That's for your purist. I love them all, but I'm trying really hard not to munch on them too much. So it's really important to have water along with those things. And if you can brush your teeth right afterwards, that's even better. Not everybody's going to do that, but that's why it's a good idea to have the plain water along. So if you're not prepared to have your toothbrush on hand, just do the healthiest dental habits possible. Brushing at least twice a day. Floss, if you can water floss, that's great. And I like to recommend using some kind of a paste or application that either has that has hydroxyfluoride, fluoroapatite in it, or calcium hydroxyapatite in it. And you can find toothpaste that have those things in it. Fluoroapatite you're going to find in MI paste, which has calcium phosphate in it, and it has fluoride in it, which can be made into fluoroapatite. And then there are many brands of toothpaste that have either nanocalcite in it or have hydroxyapatite in it. And I'm using one right now that has hydroxyapatite, and I'm using it as a leave-on. I'm actually brushing my teeth right now with something with nanocalcite in it, but I'm using the one with hydroxyapatite in it as a leave-on. So when I'm done with everything, when I'm done brushing, flossing, and rinsing, I then rub the hydroxyapatite containing toothpaste on my teeth and I leave it in. And then I try not to consume anything for half an hour if I do it during the day. And then, of course, if you do it, it's great to do it before bedtime because then it stays on for a long time. Because you're not going to be, hopefully overnight, you're not going to be consuming anything except water. So that's a good thing. And, you know, the other thing is if you eat candy with meals, then you're going to be making more saliva. So you're going to clean out the sugar better. And again, water, water, water. All right. Alcohol consumption. So alcohol consumption is something we talk about on Halloween because people go to parties and have punch or something like that. So remember that the recommendation of the National Institute on Alcohol Abuse, so four or more drinks in a night, well, in the space of 2 hours, four or more drinks for women and five or more for men over 2 hours. My goodness, can anybody really? I guess people do that. That is not something I'd ever be able to do. I would be praying to the porcelain goddess after three. I mean, I'd be excessively tipsy. I mean, I'm such a lightweight because I barely ever drink. And my beloved naturopath, I told her, I complained to her about all the tinctures I was taking. And I was saying, I don't like to drink alcohol generally. And every 3 days, I'm having the equivalent in alcohol for my tinctures of a drink every 3 days. And I don't really want to be doing that. She said, silly, go boil some water, put your tinctures in the hot, pour the water out, immediately put your tinctures in the hot water, let it sit. Alcohol will burn off. So I did that. And guess what? The alcohol evaporated much better. To the point where maybe I can actually have a drink once a week or something. Because, you know, who doesn't like a little glass of wine on Simchat Torah or Shabbos, right? So anyway, overindulging in alcohol, of course, can result in liver issues. And it can lead to an imbalance in electrolytes, which can cause dehydration and reduced energy. So alcohol is also a source of empty calories, which contributes to weight gain. And that's not the only way that alcohol contributes to weight gain. It's not just that it's empty calories. It's that it goes through this acyl-CoA system. When you are trying to lose weight or maintain your weight, you want your body to be accessing your fat stores to keep your fat stores lower. So if you drink alcohol, alcohol gets converted to acyl-CoA, which is very easily used up by the Krebs cycle. So your body is efficient and body is expedient. So if it sees a source of energy that's easily accessible, it's going to use that before it goes into your fat stores. It's harder for your body to get into your fat stores for energy, and it's only going to do that if it doesn't have other readily available energy. So when you consume alcohol, you're consuming readily available, you're creating readily available energy as though you ate sugar. Sugar, same thing. When you have sugar, you're less, it's not just that your body's going to take the excess sugar and store it as fat. It will, but it's also going to use the sugar that you just ate expediently as an easy source of energy. So that's how that works. And then the other thing with alcohol is that your body, your liver prioritizes detoxifying. Your body sees the alcohol. Remember, all of the cells in your liver do all of the same things. And the things that each liver cell does, there's a bazillion things that each cell does. But among the things that all of your liver cells do is metabolize your macronutrients, your protein, your fat, and your electrolytes. And so if you want to be metabolizing your protein to use the protein to create structure, to create muscle cells, to create skin, to create enzymes, all of the things that you want to have use muscle cells for, use your protein for, you need your liver available to make that happen. If you're drinking alcohol, your liver's not going to do that. You're just going to excrete your extra protein. If you want to metabolize sugars and store them as glycogen for energy, or you want to use your sugars for energy, you need your liver to be available to do that. And if you're drinking alcohol, it's going to prioritize that alcohol dehydrogenase system over, you know, all the systems that metabolize sugars and starches, and it's not going to be as available to do that. So you gain fat that way. And same with fats. You're not going to metabolize your fat as readily, and the fat will get stored. So drinking alcohol causes weight gain. And some people find that if they're drinking a fair bit and they stop, they lose a bunch of weight right away. So just be aware that that can happen. The other thing is, if you're going to drink, you, again, have the water on hand, because water is alcohol dehydrogenase uses water in the pathway to dehydrogenate it. So you need water to make that happen. And so whatever water's in your body, that pathway is going to use, and then you're going to wind up dehydrated. So you need to replace. Drink, drink, drink. If you want to not have a hangover in the next day, part of what you do, I'm not saying drink enough so that you get drunk, but if you have overindulged, one of the best things you can do is drink, and especially drink electrolytes, because you want to just get all that water in. And the electrolytes is a really good idea, because you're going to absorb the water better. The reason you put electrolytes in your water is so that your body wants the minerals that are in the water. So your kidneys are going to take those electrolytes in, and the water will follow. So you're going to be less likely to excrete extra water and hang on to it. I'm finding that I'm drinking, you know, this beautiful electrolyte water. Look, if you're watching on Facebook Live or Instagram Live, you can see I have this cute glass that says "Bloom where you are planted," and there's a bicycle on it. Very nice glass. Oh. So I'm drinking lots of electrolyte water. I'm still going to the bathroom a lot. Maybe a little bit less, but not so sure. But if you're going to drink alcohol, drink water too. Okay. And then look at your nutrition labels. If you have a food allergy, make sure you're not eating a food allergy. If you have a food intolerance, don't eat the food intolerance. That's a good idea. And so it can be hard to keep checking for that stuff. So you have to make sure that you're not consuming a food allergy. So if you have a peanut allergy, peanut allergies can be a real problem at Halloween, because not only do people throw Reese's and Snickers in the mix, but, and you have to stay away from those things, but you might have a bowl of candy that has a mixture of things, and some things have peanuts and some don't. So that's a real problem. And that's especially a problem if things are unlabeled and unwrapped. So if you have allergies, it's a good idea to stay away from unwrapped things, just so you know what's getting into your body. And also, if an allergen isn't listed on a candy, it may still not be safe. So you have to make sure that if you have allergies, you want your candy to say on the wrapper that it is allergen free. And there's a lot of brands that are like that. That they're going to say, and most packages say in them, contains, you know, these common allergens: peanuts, tree nuts, wheat, dairy. It'll say right on it. So that's something to look at. And because you can get allergy-free options, things that are made in a facility that exclude common allergenic ingredients. So there's something called the Teal Pumpkin Project, which was launched by the Food Allergy Research and Education. Households are encouraged to offer non-food-based treats for trick-or-treaters. That's another thing you can do. Give treats that are not food. You can get printable signs. You can get... FAIR's website has suggestions for non-food treats. One thing you can give out is glow sticks, because they're fun, especially if people are trick-or-treating in the dark. Those can be really useful. So you could give out little stickers, little toys, and make sure your toys are age appropriate. If they're too small, you don't want a small child to eat one. But a glow stick is a great idea, because generally kids are not going to eat those. And you can get a wide one that's obviously for holding and, you know, being light. And you can get the necklacey kinds of ones too. Those are fine. You could also get creative with scary, healthy alternatives. You can do a lot of cool art with fruit. I'm looking at this plate here. It's hilarious. So somebody took celery and made, it's not ants on a log, so they put a nut butter inside and whatever. So again, you have to make sure that whoever's going to consume this isn't allergic to peanuts or tree nuts. So say you put some nut butter in, peanut or cashew or hazelnut or almond butter, inside your celery stick, and then you get candy googly eyes. And instead of raisins, or in addition to raisins, raisins or cranberries or goji berries, whatever you want, you put googly eyes on the celery stick. It's hilarious. You can take a banana and get little tiny, I guess these are little licorice candies. I'm not sure if they're licorice candies or chocolate covered coffee beans. And they have the bananas. You cut the bananas in half so that they have a scalloped bottom, and they look like ghosts, and they have two little dark eyes and a nose or mouth or whatever it is. And then it looks like there's an apple here. This is very clever. They took the apple and cut it in half, cut out a portion that's a mouth. They filled it with nut butter. They put half a strawberry in, so it looks like a tongue sticking out, and then they took what looks like sunflower seeds and put it around the outside, makes it look like teeth, and then two candy googly eyes on top. So clever. Very impressive. Really delightful. So these are all healthy things, and there happens to be some skewers here that alternate. It looks like it's alternating mango and blackberry, which is beautiful. And you could throw some candy corn in there if you want to, and there's some other nicely decorated stuff. But this is so clever. So you could take healthy stuff and make it scary. I love these ghost bananas and these googly eye celery sticks and these scary monster apples. They're just so cute. So that's something you can do. And then you get the kids to eat fruit. It's very nice. And you too. And this is a great thing to bring to a potluck. So getting homemade sweet treats, that can be something you can do too. And you can just make a sweet treat and maybe put a pumpkin on it, pumpkin flavored thing, or make pumpkin brownies or something like that, with all good ingredients, whole grains, evaporated cane juice, maple syrup, put pumpkin into it, which is great for fiber and for slowing down the absorption of sugar. Very nice. And don't feel deprived. If there's a certain treat that you really want, so have it, unless you're allergic to it or you're terribly diabetic. Have it. If you tell yourself to avoid candy altogether at Halloween, you're just not going to be happy, and you'll feel deprived and you'll want to binge. So you don't want to over-fixate on how healthy foods are. You want to find a way to enjoy what you like. There's a general recommendation to eat healthfully 90% of the time and eat what you want 10% of the time. So if most of your food is really, really healthy and you have an occasional treat, that's going to be fine, generally. Because if you obsess with healthy eating all the time, you're just not going to be happy. And I certainly don't eat healthy 100% of the time. I do, but I do most of the time. I try to watch what I eat. You won't see me at fast food. You will see me at the bakery now and again. I did go to the bakery today, which is, the thing is, Dow Vitality is across the street from Flower Girl, and I don't consume gluten frequently, but Flower Girl has seriously amazing sourdough bread. So I bought a loaf of sourdough, I cut it into quarters, and I'm going to get to keep one, and my staff is going to get the other three quarters. So I have a little bit. I'll have it now, and I probably won't have it again for months. But I can do a little bit of sourdough once in a while, but I wouldn't do it every day. I might do it every day until this little chunk is gone. So good. Their sourdough is very sour, which means there's a lot of fermentation going on, which means it's going to be easier to digest if you're gluten sensitive, not intolerant, and even if you're not. Obviously, if you have celiac disease, you can't do sourdough bread. So don't focus on what to restrict. Focus on what to add. Have a few pieces of candy once again after you've eaten a meal that's super healthy. Continue to eat super healthy. And then, you're not going to be inclined to eat the whole bag of candy. So that's something to do. I mean, I certainly can't eat a lot of dessert after I've had a healthy supper of a nice big salad, maybe some corn on the cob and some fish. That I can't I can have a little bit of dessert, but not much. And this time of year especially, I like to eat or make fruit crumbles. They have some, there's a bakery that makes them at the store's farmer's market, some beautiful fruit crumbles. Last week, I got blueberry and apple from her. And fruit crumbles, very easy to make. I also make it myself. And really, really easy to make. And I talked about how to make it last time. And this time of year, the apples are just so nice to bake apples into a fruit crumble. And I sweeten it with a little bit of evaporated cane juice, some maple syrup, and then I put a lot of cinnamon in it. When you put a lot of cinnamon in something, it sweetens it up and you might not need as much sugar. So anyway, so that's how to make Halloween a little bit healthier. All right, so very good. Now, I only have a little bit of time left, and so I wanted to dive into some fall vegetables and their healing properties. I may not get through all of these, in which case I will talk about them next week. So here's some terrific fall vegetables and their healing properties. Number one, your favorite and mine, kale. Not everybody likes kale, I know. But kale is really a superfood. It has a lot. It has vitamin K, A, and C, has B vitamins. It's incredibly full of antioxidants. It's full of carotenoids, beta-carotene, lutein, astaxanthin, all kinds of, not astaxanthin, zeaxanthin. So it has a lot of antioxidants in it. Kale is something. Kale, I tend to recommend that you eat it cooked. If you eat kale, it's hard to digest if it's raw. If you're going to eat raw kale, you want to make sure it's baby kale. But otherwise, kale can be sauteed. It can be used in soup. You can make a pureed kale soup. Kale can be roasted, and you can drizzle olive oil and soy sauce or tamari over it and make it into kale chips. And then it's yummy, pretty yummy that way. Another favorite thing I like to do is to take the stems and the veins out of the kale and then tear it up and make a massaged kale salad. So I tear it up into small bits. I put a bunch of olive oil and good quality salt over it. So some Celtic sea salt or Himalayan or Redmond salt from Utah. And I massage it until it's mushy. And then once it's mushy, then you put a little bit of molasses over it. And I like to make it on the sweet side. And you can use feta or non-dairy feta if you want to in the salad. And then throw some other sweet things over it. So you can put in cranberries or raisins or goji berries and even a few raspberries over it. And I would recommend putting in some balsamic vinegar too. And you massage it all together and then top it with the whatever kind of feta you like. It's also good with some crushed nuts on it. So crushed walnuts or crushed pecans are the best, I think, for this, because if you're making it a sweeter salad, it's amazing that way. So you do some crushed pecans on top and you have a great salad, but do massage it because kale is hard for your body to get into. If you just eat raw kale without doing anything to it, it's going to kind of go right through you. And so it's better to cook it, steam it or put it in soup or saute it or massage it, break it down and massage it in some way. And when you eat it raw and massaged, you're going to get more of the enzymes. There's some nutrients that don't get cooked out. But on the other hand, when you cook kale, you're distressing the cell membrane, the cell walls, and you're going to be more readily available to get inside the cell walls. So you'll get more of the carotenoids, which are inside the cells. Okay, then there's sweet potatoes. Yay, sweet potatoes. Sweet potatoes are high in vitamin. Well, this always says, they always say these veggies are high in vitamin A. I don't think that's technically correct. Vitamin A is only found in animals. But the precursor to vitamin A is in vegetables and plant substances. So beta carotene is high. There's a lot of beta carotene in anything that's a leaf and anything that's orange or yellow. There's going to be beta carotene in it. And beta carotene can be converted to vitamin A. So to say vitamin A, sweet potatoes are high in vitamin A, it's technically not true. It's high in beta-carotene and other carotenoids. And they also have a bunch of vitamin C in them. They have natural carbohydrates and natural sugars, which your body uses for energy, potassium, and fiber. So the fiber that's in sweet potatoes is going to be used as a prebiotic, and your body's going to send its probiotics there and help you have a good microbiome, have good gut flora. Potassium and fiber are also really good for your heart health. And then there's broccoli. Broccoli is just an amazing superfood. And it's a great fall vegetable. It's a heavier vegetable. And broccoli and kale, when I lived in Newfoundland, they really were able to extend the season. And I would see broccoli and kale even after it had gotten cold. I mean, they managed to grow it up to December or so. And they probably can grow it longer now because climate change, right? But I would be freezing and going to a farmer's market and picking up kale and broccoli because it could still grow because it's so hardy. I mean hardy, H-A-R-D-Y, as well as hearty, H-E-A-R-T-Y. It's both. Broccoli has glucosinolates and antioxidants. It has carotenoids, it has chlorophyll, vitamins E, vitamin K, phenolic compounds. Broccoli and broccoli sprouts are known to generally be anti-cancer, it's those glucosinolates. So they're really good for liver detoxification and just keeping you healthy in general. It's really good stuff. So broccoli, of course, can be sauteed, it can be steamed. I'm not a big fan of eating broccoli raw. Some people do it. But the thing with cruciferous vegetables like broccoli and kale and Brussels sprouts is they do have compounds in it that are goitrins, so they can suppress your thyroid function. We don't usually see that if people eat a little bit of kale every few days. Where we sometimes see it is when people are juicing kale and they're doing a bunch of kale juiced every single day. So they're going to get a higher proportion of those goitrins. And goitrins can be inactivated, or goitrogens. Those goitrogens can be inactivated by cooking. So I don't recommend eating raw kale all the time. If you make a raw kale salad and you eat off it for a couple days and then you don't have it for a while, that's fine. But if you're, and even if you have the salad, you're not going to have nearly as much as if you're juicing the kale because you tend to use a lot more and then you're having raw kale every single day. So you're going to get more goitrogens that way. So rapini is also similar to broccoli. It's just a little more bitter and leafier. And things that are bitter stimulate your digestive secretions. They're really good for you. So I'm going to stop there because it's time. And it's just about an hour. So we'll talk more about great vegetables for you to eat during the fall next week. You have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprout. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, WHUS.org.